This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. As billions of cicadas emerge after 13 years underground, St. Louisans are noticing something mysterious. It seems this brood is avoiding big parts of the city. To find out why that is and what it says about our region's landscape and ecosystem, STLPR morning newscaster and host of The Gateway, Abby Larico, sat down with University of Missouri St. Louis biologists Sarah Miller and Amy Dunlap. Their research focuses on insects, but neither had studied cicadas primarily until now.
Well, I think we were kind of excited by the general cicada bug that's in the air and thought that it would be something cool to do a project on. We had been talking about it with other people around, being kind of the insect researchers at UMSL. People are like, oh, so what do you know about cicadas? And we saw a good opportunity to kind of jump in here.
Yeah, these periodical cicada booms are just such cool natural history. I mean, it is just so, it's so cool to observe, but it also brings up some really cool biological questions. When you're thinking about an animal that spends most of its life underground for many, many years, that's going to intersect with some really cool and basic questions.
Yeah, and let's talk about what some of those questions are. You know, what are you researching? What are you trying to answer and figure out, whether it's the diversification of this species, of the behavior of the species? What are you really, what questions are you looking to answer?
Well, we're both interested also in, like, intersections of animals and urban environments.
Oh, okay.
Right, because that has implications for how the populations of those animals, how they will look, what they'll be doing. And when you have an animal that only emerges every 13 years, that's a long time scale. And it's a long time scale if we think about patterns of development in a city or in an urban area.
So you're saying that when you look at a 13-year lifespan, or the lifespan 13 years of which is spent underground, the things that happen above ground can change quite rapidly, and the two coincide with, like, one impacts the other?
Yeah, right. So, you know, they're spending most of the 13 years, you know, about 8 to 10 inches below the soil. Well, anytime that soil is disturbed, that population will disappear. So there are huge parts of St. Louis where, you know, we were talking to people like, the last time the cicadas were out, you know, how many were in your yard? Like, I never heard them.
Interesting.
Right? And so, and that's probably because of how their house had been built way back in whatever decade their house was built, or their neighborhood was developed. All of that soil was disturbed, and so they don't have cicadas. So you can think about 200 years of development in St. Louis, and for any given plot of land, if that soil was super disturbed at any point in those 200 years, you're not going to see these cicadas.
Wow. Even if you did a major landscaping project 5-10 years ago, that could impact the cicada population in your yard.
Yeah, if you were digging up that much soil, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. So what does it look like to research that? How does that project kind of work? How does the data collecting and the observing, I mean, how, I know that scientific research can be very, very in the weeds, no pun intended here with this one. It can also be relying quite a bit on just observation. Tell me about what your research is really looking at.
Yeah, so we were really interested in trying to cover as much ground across St. Louis as possible. So because of this, we wanted to do kind of a sampling method that would be easy and fast for people to do. And so we're trying to collect data both using your eyes and your ears around town. So in places where there are tons of cicadas around, you know, it's really easy to hear them, it's really easy to see them. In places where cicada densities are kind of lower, you might hear them but not see them. So the sampling method that we went with is actually using this free app on your phone that you can download and use your phone's microphone to track the amount of sound around. And so what we're asking people to do is to take a 3-minute recording of the sound around their environment, and then at the same time use their eyes and ears and look around and see, you know, do you actually see cicadas? Do you hear cicadas as well? And so the data that we're hoping to get is sort of both like sound presence scape across St. Louis as well as a sort of cicada count.
Is there a conclusion you're hoping to be able to reach? Or is that too oversimplifying of what the goal of what you're looking at is?
Well, I think for any kind of science, people always have their pet hypotheses, but the data are what they are, and what's out there is what's out there. So however it turns out will be interesting. But we are expecting to see an overlay of decades of development, population density, how much roads, impervious surface is there, green spaces that were historic green spaces. You know, we should see cicadas in Lafayette Square Park. We should see cicadas in Forest Park. We may not see cicadas in Grand Center.
Wow.
And so, you know, overlaying all of those observations that Sarah was talking about with the geography and the history of the area. And that's what we have an awesome collaborator to help us with, Dr. Andrew Hurley, who is a professor of history at UMSL, who has written a number of books about St. Louis history and is interested in urban history and urban ecology. We're combining forces to kind of get this big picture of St. Louis. So we have ideas about where cicadas should be and where they shouldn't. And it's holding up okay so far.
You know, it's probably too early to say much about what our data is going to look like, but it does seem that much lower cicada densities as you get kind of in the heart of the city and much higher cicada densities as you get further out away with some hot spots around. So I live near Forest Park and cicadas are booming in Forest Park right now.
Wow. Yeah. So this is interesting because it is exactly aligning with the interests you both have, and throw a little history in there too. It's telling this underground story, if you will, of the history and the development of St. Louis. I know we're talking about for the past 13 years, and then is that, remind me the lifespan of the two broods again. What's the maximum years we're looking at? Like about two decades, basically, right?
Yeah, so cicadas are complicated, and Amy can help chime in here with any.
That's a T-shirt right there. Cicadas are complicated.
Cicadas are complicated. Yeah, which I, getting into learning more about cicadas has been a fun part of this project as well. So there are cicadas that live for 13 years, cicadas that live for 17 years. Mm-hmm. In the St. Louis region, we're just going to find those cicadas that live for 13 years.
Okay.
There are multiple species within that 13-year group. So there are potentially multiple species around the St. Louis area. And then what we call a brood is those that emerge in a year. So there are multiple broods. So we could get other emergence of 13-year cicadas on different years. But the brood that is emerging this year is the biggest brood, both for the, you know, for 13-year cicadas and 17-year cicadas, and has sort of the largest area that it covers in the Midwest.
I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you clarified, because cicadas, growing up in the Midwest, I know cicada noises. You know, we all are familiar with that sound, but the sound is different this year. So really, even if you are in a place where they aren't, the two broods aren't overlapping, which I understand is mostly southern Illinois area.
Yeah, just a tiny little spot where they kind of bump up to each other.
Okay, so even if you're not in that area, you will be noticing more cicadas in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, absolutely. And in August, we'll hear our regular cicadas. So those are the ones that you were talking about, are the annual cicadas. And those are cicadas that come up every year. And those are our late summer cicadas. And the cicadas that we see, you know, I hear them in my yard, and I do not hear these 13-year cicadas right now. And we've heard that from a few people that have been we've been talking to with the data. They hear annual cicadas in August every year. They hear them so loud, but there are none of these 13-year cicadas calling for them. And that's another layer of the questions that we're interested in.
Yeah, so I might ask you a question that you're also seeking the answer to here. I know cicadas are complicated, but why is it that these different species become part of these broods and then pick this life cycle that they do? Why is it that the ones that are emerging here in late May, early June are doing so?
Yeah, there are a lot of examples of animal aggregations in nature where animals come together of a species, and tons of them are there for certain life events.
Hmm.
And that's because there are benefits to being in a giant group.
Can you give me one of those examples?
So actually some of my grad students have noticed this. If you look around your yard in an area with a bunch of cicadas, generally the birds are really happy too. They're there, they're picking them off, mm-hmm. they're not really great flyers. They're, you know, sort of a tasty, tasty meal. And so one of the benefits by coming up en masse is that if individuals aren't that great at escaping predators, but if there are enough other individuals around that can just give you a chance to escape by chance.
Strength in numbers.
Strength in numbers. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And then so kind of like a middle school clique, you've got brood 13 that's all out there, or brood 19 rather, brood 17. They've decided they're going to come out this time. The August cicadas doing it differently. Different
exactly.
Sociological experiment there.
Yeah. I mean, they're coming out in numbers, but not mm-hmm. the numbers we're seeing right now yeah. where you can hear them over the air conditioning in your car as you drive down 64.
Right. Speaking of that noise, they make a lot of noise, and this is definitely noticeable for a lot of folks. People are going outside and measuring the volumes they're mm-hmm. able to record. If they are hearing something like this and not able to enjoy their backyards or whatever they're trying to do outside as much as normal, is this like a soundtrack of the summer type of situation, or is this just going to be for a couple of weeks? What can we tell folks about?
It'll be over soon. Yeah, so yeah. I know that the noises are hard for a lot of people. That unending noise can be really tough. For some folks, I mean, I'm happy in it. I revel in it. I'm like talking to the cicadas. I'm super thrilled. We're only talking about a couple of weeks because they're going to mate, they're going to be gone, they're going to die, and we'll start to hear those sounds become less and less, and then we'll be just back to our normal August annual cicadas.
Yeah, and I think some of it might also be a sort of shift in the way that you're thinking of it. So, you know, we were all here for the eclipse, you know, this sort of amazing natural phenomenon that everyone kind of came together to appreciate. And I think you can think of the cicadas as kind of that same thing. You know, they are found only in a small part of the world. And so appreciating the fact that you have a really large, loud accumulation of them rather than being irritated with them might be the way to go.
Yeah, people are traveling here. People are traveling to the Midwest just to hear these cicadas.
Really?
Yeah, just like the eclipse. Maybe not as many people.
Not as many people
traveled for the eclipse, but
there are
yeah, heard of a number of people that are traveling to hear. Yeah, there are insect enthusiasts out there. We love them. We are insect enthusiasts ourselves.
Wow. Well, Sarah, you mentioned the eclipse there, and it reminds me of just kind of the silver lining aspect of all of this. Is there some silver lining if you happen to be noticing a lot of cicadas where you live? Is that ecologically a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to, so they spend most of their 13 years underground feeding on trees. And so it probably speaks to the fact that you have a lot of really old, really healthy trees around, you know, generally sort of good habitats for insects.
And if that habitat is good enough for the cicadas with the trees, that means it's good enough for other arthropods. And those arthropods are feeding birds, right? All of this is coming together to form this beautiful naturescape for you of what you're going to have in your yard. And so if you've got cicadas, I would be very happy for you. Also, all of those cicadas, you know, once they die, that's a whole lot of nutrients going back into the soil and into your yard, a huge pulse of nutrients.
So this is a quite a large brood, quite a lot of different, I think, Sarah, you mentioned that you live near Forest Park and you can mm-hmm. hear them, but there are people who probably live a few blocks from Forest Park who probably don't hear much of anything. That's all to say lots of different data points. How can people help with this? How can people contribute to the research that you're conducting right now?
Yeah, so we have a website set up where people can kind of see our 3-minute protocol for collecting both our sort of soundscape and a number of cicadas, and then upload data there.
So you're out there taking videos anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're out there taking videos anyway.
Yeah, people can do that for just their yard, or maybe they're going on a walk with the dog, because there's some blocks in the city that have cicadas and some that don't. And
yeah.
So knowing where they aren't is just as valuable to us as knowing where they are.
And I would say that was one of the things that we've been a little surprised that we've found so far is how patchy they are across the city, so that you can get quite different numbers of cicadas, you know, block to block or on these very fine scales. So the more observations we have, the better our data set is going to be.
That's fantastic. And we're talking on Friday before Memorial Day weekend. We're still seeing some people, a big question people are pitching is, am I just not seeing them yet? If you're going to hear them, are you hearing them at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, that's so recording, not hearing them is just as helpful, you were saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. I know we've talked a little bit about the history of St. Louis and whatnot, but just in general, my final question is, what is the point of studying insect behavior? Why look into this? What is our greater lesson in what you do?
First, they're intrinsically awesome. And second, they're tractable. So, you know, I used to work with birds. Birds can live a long time. The birds I worked with would live 20 years. And we can test these, you know, important questions in ecology and evolution and urban ecology and how, you know, humans and wildlife are interacting. And there are only so many ways you can ask those questions with an animal like a bird. But within an insect, in addition to them being awesome and cool, you can get to a lot of these questions because the scale of their lives is usually, well, with the exception of these periodical cicadas, which are amazing, it's more tractable. We can get to things and we can test things.
Interesting.
So when I'm going out looking at, you know, bees and flies, I'm testing the same things that I was testing when I worked on birds and when I worked on mammals.
Interesting. Sarah?
Yeah, so to add on to what Amy says and on kind of a depressing note, we are also seeing sort of globally declines in insect biodiversity. And while this may be really exciting news to a lot of people that are not into insects, it can have really detrimental effects on other animals. So, you know, insects are eaten by birds and mammals and other organisms. Insects are pollinators or important for keeping down pest species. And so just in general, learning more about their basic biology, as well as educating people on why they are exciting and cool species is really important for us to learn more about what is going wrong and what we can do to help these species out as well.
It seems like there are going to be so many layers to what you learn from this project. It's quite interesting. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you feel like is important and you want to make sure you mention as part of this conversation?
I just hope people enjoy this awesome natural history that's happening. They're cool insects. They look really cool. They're very cool looking insects, and it's just fun to sit and watch them. And so I hope that people appreciate that. Enjoy that as much as they can, and then kind of think more about the other insects that are in their yard. Like Sarah said, we're losing a lot of them, and we have some that are declining here in St. Louis as well. And so every animal needs supporters out there.
These guys are truly out here sounding the alarm for just paying more attention to the diversity and the nature that's happening all around our communities.
Absolutely.
I think it's cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you both so much for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This episode was produced and engineered by Abby Larico.
Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
and Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.